this week on The Inside Flap.
But I just sing it, and I don't say the Ghostbusters part at all. It makes me feel powerful, and it usually goes over pretty well with the audience. You know, particularly when you get to what I think of as the climax of the song, and you go like, "Bustin' makes me feel good." People like that. I also felt self-conscious because I knew that people knew who I was on the set, and I never wanted to look for, you know, I couldn't just sit there and say, "This is so boring." I had to say like, "Oh, this is, thank you so much. And we've all worked so hard, and now you're working hard and everything's wonderful." And so on doorknob days, I would just go to the library. I would just be missing.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus. Welcome to our show. Seated across the desk to my right,
declarative,
is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
And resting comfortably on the floral settee across the snack shack is Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior!
Look at him. He got it up into the red with that one.
Nice.
Thank you for joining us here on
The Inside Flap,
episode 138. And we have a good one for you today. We're joined by Lemony Snicket, a.k.a. Daniel Handler. You know this guy, the guy responsible for the Series of Unfortunate Events books. His new book is called Poison for Breakfast, which is a delight.
It's a cute book, too.
Yeah. As is Lemony Snicket. Had a great time chatting with him.
Like, if you ever had to give someone breakfast in bed or something, it'd be a really cute, because it's a slim little book, to like tuck in there with a vase of flowers and like a pretty thing.
It'd be perfect to set right on the
Someone with a sense of humor, of course.
We'll have that conversation for you in just a few, as well as book recommendations.
Book reviews!
And the
audiobook of the week.
Audiobook of the week. And that's right, I've got another good one. I know you're like, "Dave, when are you going to stop bringing us these great audiobooks of the week?" Well,
every week.
Never, never. I'm going to continue to bring top-notch quality audiobooks of the week. But first, listen, guys, as you know, I just started a new job at East High School. Well, I'm here to tell you that the honeymoon is officially over.
Oh, dear.
As you recall, last week I was telling you guys how I had my own classroom all to myself. Well, now, suddenly, not only did I get the hot pop in early Monday morning, another teacher, "Hey, how you doing? I'm the so-and-so teacher. Oh, by the way, hate to be the bearer of bad news."
Oh, but, no. Really?
"I'm going to be in here during second period."
Is that your off period?
That is one of my two off periods, the other one being third period, and I got the news that, oh, by the way, the music class is now going to be...
What are you supposed to do? Where are you supposed to go?
Well, that's the thing. The problem is, as you know, at very big classes, the building is in tremendous use. So the one class, they were literally meeting in the cafeteria. They had no place to meet.
Oh.
They found out that my room was available during second.
Yeah, but what about you?
Well, and this is not an uncommon problem for teachers in schools, in overcrowded schools, to have.
Oh, okay.
Like, I remember when I was in New York, the second school I taught at in New York, shout out to the Richard R. Green High School of Teaching.
But this is Denver, Dave. This isn't New York.
I know, but this is East. This is East.
It's a popular
2,600 kids. And yes, it's a massive building, a huge sprawling building, but, you know.
So are we going on the record?
Yeah.
As saying your school is overcrowded?
That's
what you said.
I don't know if I would say it's overcrowded.
Okay.
It's crowded.
It sounds like they need to raise some money.
There are trailers.
Build a new...
The
oh,
back.
There's trailers.
There's
that's
trailers
a sign.
In the
yeah,
back.
Yeah,
yep.
Drew.
What science trailers?
Yeah.
What school doesn't have trailers?
The last school I taught at did not have trailers.
Okay.
The prison.
Yeah.
The one that was a prison. Speaking of prison.
The one with no windows.
I was showing, as I was doing a presentation for my students about, you know, a little bio, a little background on myself, and I showed him the first school, And I'll get to my point in a second about the second New York school I taught at. But the first school, which is, it literally, and I found a picture of it online. The thing is a massive structure. When I was there, there was like 6,000 kids there. This thing is seven stories high, and it's like a city block long. And I pulled up a picture of it and showed it to the kids, and they were like, that is a prison.
Yeah.
You worked in a prison?
It sounds like a prison, yeah.
It was awful. And maybe someday I'll go a little more detail into my just horrific 6 months working in that school. But there was plenty of space in that building, funnily enough. The second place I taught in New York, like every classroom was in use every period, which apparently is the same deal at East. So what the teachers did is there was one faculty lounge that all the teachers went to, although I found it was fine. I couldn't get a lot of work done because everybody's in there. So you're just doing a lot of socializing, you know, chit-chat, talking about sports.
It's like what offices used to be like.
Yeah. Except you're not trying to do any work, or maybe you're doing a little prep work for
it's just social
time. It's just social hour. And then I got in trouble because I ran an Oscar pool for the Academy Awards.
Oh.
And I won. And this one guy, his name was Daryl. So Daryl got the troops together apparently on one period when I wasn't in there. And he's like, this guy, Medicus, he bullied us into being in this pool. He bullied us. And he got like a group of like four or five teachers who were just steamed up that I had. How dare I take their money?
About an Oscar pool?
A $5 Oscar pool. He's like,
well, have they never worked in an office in America before?
I confronted him. He's like, I didn't know anything about the Oscars. I didn't want to do this.
Then why did you do it? You're an adult.
He's like, you kept harassing me until I felt I had no option. I'm like, look at, first of all, the guy is like 6'4 and 250 pounds. I'm 155 pounds soaking. Back then, I was like 145 pounds soaking wet, 5'10. Come on. I didn't bully anybody doing it. But, but, yeah.
You know, I did kind of get bullied one time with going in on a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
By the the secretary, the main desk secretary at an architecture firm I worked at.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, that's kind of.
Yeah. That's, I didn't really want to do it, but I also knew that it was my decision.
Because if
like,
you
I knew
win,
I could have said no. I just liked her and I didn't want to hurt her feelings.
Yeah, but if you went. Everybody wins, you know, in that
situation.
When
I had to sign a thing, who knows if it would have been legal, because everybody right. was convinced we were going to win. Yes, yeah. Andrew.
So I still remember a Final Four poll of my sophomore year of college.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this was many decades ago. And I won that baby. To the surprise of many, I won.
Wow.
And Greg Jewell still has not paid up.
Wow, you still remember that?
And
oh,
still
I still remember it.
Oh, that's funny.
That's the worst when people don't pay up, though.
That's funny.
It's strange.
You know, and it's big money. I think even back then it was like $800. I mean, so,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is funny. And speaking of school, I just got a hot text from Paige, the dance teacher.
Mm-hmm.
She sent a screenshot that the music teacher, I guess the music teacher had her students do little surveys. So it says, describe your favorite teacher. What types of things did you do in that class? And the answer is, my favorite teacher right now is my drama teacher because he's funny. So, boom! There
applause.
You go! Yes.
That's nice.
Thank you very much.
Now, aren't there two drama teachers in that school?
Yes,
yeah, but
the other's
a woman.
The other's a woman. Right. Pronoun she, her.
I was waiting for the he.
Yeah,
yeah. That's when pronouns are very important.
Of course, we co-teach a couple classes one period, and she was in there covering after I had been there the first week, and she came back to me, and she's like, so I asked them what they know about you, and she's like, and she goes, hey, he lets us call him Dave. That was their comment to her about
that's
me.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, huh. But that's what's going on there, and now I have to find a spot but you know, usually I go for a run during my first off block.
It's been 115 degrees every day, though.
The next off block, I might have to find a, you know, maybe I'll get the teachers to join a fantasy football league in the faculty lounge.
There you go.
I don't even know if there is a faculty lounge.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
But, you know.
Don't you have a new teacher luncheon every week or something?
Yeah,
once a month?
Once every Thursday, new teacher luncheon.
That'll be nice.
I'll report back to you on that one.
Yeah, I'd like to hear about that.
All new teachers.
That's fun.
Gather in there. But anyway, that's what's going on. That's your update from East High School in Denver. Laura, how has your week been?
It's been good. I've been tired yet again. Another week of Laura.
What?
Tired.
Come on.
I had to get up at 4:40 in the morning on Saturday.
Yes, we got up at
4:40. We got up at 4:40 because I was voluntold, as they say,
voluntold,
that I needed to help with food prep for the state fair parade.
Yes.
Because Sylvia was marching in the state fair parade with her high school. And so we all got up early. She had to be there, I had to be there at 5:15. So then, by default, Sylvia had to be there at 5:15. And went in to the main building. And so it's 100 kids, right?
100 kids.
100 band kids. Plus,
good size band.
Parent volunteers and teacher helpers. I don't know. They get brass teachers and drum percussion people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's breakfast. And we're setting up hard boiled eggs and oranges and apples and string cheese, proteins and fruit basically.
Right.
And then we have to make these ham and cheese croissant sandwiches.
Oh.
Take the ham out for the vegetarians.
Fancy.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But the woman had gotten Kraft singles, which were individually wrapped in plastic.
Oh, yeah.
The lights.
And those are not easy to pull apart either.
And there were three things going on. One, the lights where we were at in the school lobby were not on. There were just auxiliary lights in hallways.
Uh-huh.
So it was very dark where we were working. The other thing that was going on was the air condition was not on either because it's 5:15 on a Saturday morning.
Right.
So it is incredibly hot inside there. And then the third thing was I was handed plastic food
preparatory gloves.
So I had overdressed because I thought it was chilly that morning. It was chilly.
Chilly outside.
I had plastic gloves and I'm trying to take.
Were they the skin tight or were they the kind of loose?
They were loose.
Loose. That's the worst.
And I was trying to take plastic off the Kraft singles as fast as I could. Because the marching band kids were breathing down our necks as parents.
Oh, they're hungry.
They were excited.
They
were hungry. They were ready to get down to that state fair.
Yeah.
They were super pumped up. And so it was teenage energy just waiting.
Mm.
And with the Kraft singles, you can't see. There's a little tiny seam
you got to grab correctly.
You got to look for.
And sometimes you rip off the top part
of the cheese. And my hands were sweating. I'm sweating. I'm hunched over because the tables are low.
Oh, yeah.
They're 30.
Oh,
they're
sure.
Just low. They're
right.
Low tables.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing around it. I've got parents with the ham detail.
Are you sweating?
That are waiting.
At any point, did a drop of your sweat drop into, be honest?
It wasn't as bad as Kesha. No.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I'll say that. It was not as bad as the Kesha concert. If it had been the heat index at the Kesha concert, that might have been possible.
Right.
But no.
Some kids might have had some Laura sweat.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that did not happen.
Okay.
Did not happen.
That's good.
But it was rough. And so I'm hunched over. I'm trying to get these Kraft singles unwrapped as fast as I can. I've got sweaty hands. I've got the ham detail parents staring at me because I'm the loser who can't open the Kraft singles. But I don't know if they knew how hard it was.
Right.
It was really dark and hot and it was hard to see. And so We finally feed the kids. It's whatever. We're breaking down these tables. These tables aren't easy to get down.
Right.
I get a text from Dave Medicus who says, "Hi, I'm sitting in the car. Come on out when you're done." And so,
well, hold on. I don't know. Is that what I said?
Yeah, I'm sitting in the car.
Well, the thing is, I got over
car.
There.
I'm in the car.
I was going to help load up the truck.
Look for your exact text.
So I got over there, and it turned out they had already loaded up the trucks. So I'm like, oh, this is great. I'll just go chill in the car. And,
here's all you said was, at 5:54 a.m. on Saturday, I'm in the main parking lot.
There you go.
And I'm sweating, trying to get these tables broken down. I've got boxes I'm trying to break down. It's pitch dark. And all I write back is, I'm inside still. And I'm inside still was meant to imply, I need your help.
Yeah, I didn't catch that.
Now, the next time they suggest this, will you recommend, can we do this the night before? Can we just make the sandwiches the day before?
Let's make the sandwiches. And in fact, I got an apology email from the band mom who's in charge, which
really?
I felt kind of bad about.
Mm.
And she apologized for not having it more ready. She said, I didn't realize that the cheese would be so hard to unwrap.
It's craft singles. I mean, they're incredibly hard to unwrap.
It's hard.
Maybe she has had no experience. Anybody who's ever had experience unwrapping a
it
slice
was kind of funny.
Craft singles.
But so I write, I'm inside still. And that's how it read in my head.
To me, it sounded like,
and Dave's,
I'm inside.
And Dave writes, okay. So then I see that, okay. Yeah. And I'm thinking, what the? And so then I said, could use some help.
Oh, could use some help. That would put a B under my bonnet. That was the curt response is when I
could
knew.
Could use some help.
You were upset. Yeah. Could use some help.
So we got all that sorted down. And the State Fair Parade was really lovely. And then, you know, we went down with my mom.
The parade was great. Yeah.
And then we had to work our way over to the actual State Fair, which is like a good 17 miles from downtown Pueblo, evidently. And we thought, because we were reading Mr. Emmons, the band director,
hand-drawn map. Yeah.
That we could just walk there.
Right.
It's 96 degrees in Pueblo.
You missed the not to scale.
Andrew.
No.
We could have taken an air-conditioned shuttle from where we parked for free.
For free.
For free.
For free. Instead, we
did. We reenacted the Bataan Death
was
March.
It? Was it like 2.5 miles?
It was like 4 miles, I feel like.
I don't know if it was that long.
We walked 4.5 miles that day.
Now, you know what this is. This is the hazing of the rookie bandman.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I didn't know which gate to go to, so I marched us all the way down.
We went to the wrong gate. We couldn't get in that way. We had to go around the corner, down another couple blocks.
So what you don't realize about Pueblo is parts of Pueblo, like where the parade is, it's lovely. It's really pretty. There's pretty shops.
Yeah. I didn't even know they had that.
It's
nice
beautiful.
Little,
it's
little
picturesque.
Uh-huh.
The other part of Pueblo that's in between the downtown area of Pueblo and the State Fair grounds looks like, what does it look like? Like Breaking Bad has happened and gone?
Yeah, it looks like the meth heyday has come.
Yes.
Everybody
like
got
the
paid.
Like the meth zombie apocalypse has happened.
Now the dealer is out of town.
And just like the rats, the like meth, rat kings are running.
The meth
it.
Habits are left behind.
Yeah.
Scurrying for
and
for
like
the
all
meth.
The all the trees
it's
are gone.
It's the worst.
Like, all the trees were gone. No shade.
There's like trees growing up through cracks in the sidewalk. That's how big the cracks were. It was dry.
Broken
was
windows
hot,
everywhere.
Bars on windows. Yeah.
Chain link.
It was.
I mean, it really looked. The war on drugs had like come and gone, and it lost. Yeah.
Now, of course, then we got into the gates of the State Fair.
Oh, the gates of hell! What?
And walked directly into 120. These gates, all they do is block any breeze from entering into that. The only tree in the place was blocking the band shell where you're trying to watch
the
performance.
Shell. That's true.
The only tree in the entire State Fair compound.
That's true. I couldn't
is
see
right
Sylvia.
In front of the band shell.
Yeah.
Where the bands perform. Oh, it was brutal. Walking around, we saw some pigs lying on there. They looked just like Charlie the English
they
Bulldog
did look like
here.
Charlie. Yeah.
We did see a muscular looking pig being out for a walk, being taken for a walk.
No
for the
leash,
rest.
Just walking.
The goats
real
were
cute.
Asleep. The cows were asleep. Everybody was too hot for anybody.
It was really miserable.
It was brutal. It's selling $39 for the old. With the old time pictures.
Oh, is that how
that
much that
still
was?
Exists? Yeah.
Oh, and then they
I
have,
can't believe they're still doing that.
They have these rinky dink fair rides, right? That we went on in our youth.
Yeah.
But when it's 110 outside, the cheap metal that's
on
there.
I can't imagine.
And
how hot
my
that
mom said, because I knew Sylvia didn't do it. She used her brain and sat in the shade like for that day.
Yeah.
But it was like $37.50 to do unlimited rides to get in to that fair ride. Yeah.
Yeah. No, thank you, Mr. State Fair. We won't be going back your way until you figure out a way to.
We did take the air-conditioned free shuttle ride back.
We certainly did, and that was glorious.
It was glorious, but it would have felt normal if we had just realized and taken it before.
And now it is the only place that you can get anymore. I feel like these kinds of places where you can get a nice
get COVID what
fresh squeezed lemonade. So a delicious. Extra sugary.
It's really sugary.
Lemonade.
They needed to back off on the sugar.
They could have backed off a bit on the sugar.
It was gritty. Gritty with sugar.
Didn't get any fried Oreos or fried food, though.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah. Andrew, that's my complaining for the week. Good old sweaty hands. How are you?
Sandwich hands.
So good. It's been a good week. And, you know, unlike the medicus is sweating.
Yeah.
Walking.
The Dowd family, the kids took off off a school Friday, and we headed up the mountains where it was a high of like 80 degrees, 78 degrees.
Sounds so nice.
No humidity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
there
just,
was no humidity where we were either, Andrew.
Yeah, no. It was just still hot as hell.
Yeah. But it was, but you know, just this is a great time up there in the mountains where the temperature starts to break.
Yeah.
It cools off, you know, pretty quickly in the afternoon. Just phenomenal. Now, we had been planning to do this for a while. We have a place up in Granby, Colorado, home of the famous Killdozer, if you want to, you know,
Google that,
Google that. But three of the largest lakes, maybe they are the largest lakes in Colorado, is Grand Lake, Shadow Mountain Lake, and Granby Lake. And so we rented a pontoon boat.
Here's the only guy I know who goes out the prior summer, buys two boats.
Yeah, but the boots.
And the boats he bought, rent a boat.
He can't fit his whole family on the boats he bought.
I can once.
Oh, okay.
And let's just say something wouldn't survive that trip.
Something would not last. Yeah.
So we rented a pontoon boat, you know, early 10 o'clock in the morning. We headed out in the lakes.
Did you have a cooler?
For a three-hour tour.
Oh, really?
Yep. 3-hour tour.
Yep.
So now, just you guys and you drove?
Just us. I captained that boat.
Okay. Did you fish?
And No, we didn't fish. But, you know, this is the first time we're going to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I laid down the law. I said, kids, I am the captain.
I'm the captain now.
Let me explain the rules of the boat.
Oh.
And so, you know, and let's just say it was an amazing time, you know, touring around the lakes, you know, seeing the perspective of all these, like, monster houses, you know, on the lake.
Oh, yeah.
And you can actually travel. They have, like, a little lock, and you can actually travel between two of the lakes.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
And
did you guys do that?
We did.
Cool.
And so we went there in the morning.
They have a lock master?
I think it's a key master. I think it's like a self-adjusting lock.
Oh.
Now, the thing is, there's nobody there directing traffic, and only one boat can come in or out at the same time.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting.
Oh.
And I had to kind of like...
Was it a backlog?
Wave a paddleboarder out of... It's like, hello, Mr. Stand-Up Paddleboarder.
Whoa.
Are you going to stand there and keep taking selfies, or can I...
Oh, really?
Oh,
yeah.
Those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it a Mr. Paddleboarder that was taking selfies?
It was a Mr. Paddleboarder. Huh. But just absolutely breathtaking. I mean, glorious. Now, we finished up the trip by taking the kids down to the south end of Shadow Mountain Lake to the islands. And we actually beached the boat on one of the islands.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kids got out and were, you know, swimming in this, you know, I would guess it's like 58 degree water. I mean, it is.
Wow.
It is chilly. Like Mountain
glacier.
Lake.
It is, yeah. And it is cold. But,
Mountain
you know.
Lakes are really cold.
That also what makes it nice to be on the water.
Yeah.
On a hot summer day.
Cools off.
And so let's just say 90 minutes later after we had left the water, we're in the car on the way back. We're actually back, you know, in there. So 90 minutes after the kids had like gotten out of the water. They're still complaining, Dad, my feet are still cold.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I guess we had our own adventure, but it's just, you know, there's just parts of Colorado that are just absolutely breathtaking, amazing.
And then there's parts of Pueblo.
Yeah. And then you go down to Pueblo.
So that's how my week ended. And, you know, I'm just back down here in the heat. I tell you, it's tough. Like, I got to get in the car and drive 2 hours just to come back to, like, you know, 95 degrees.
Yep.
And smoky. We're getting Tahoe smoke.
A little smoky. A little...
California fire smoke.
A little smoky. That's
well,
right.
Well, and another Colorado fire as well, close to where our house is up there. So I hope they have it under control. But, you know, so far we've been lucky this summer.
I know. We've been so lucky this summer.
You know, in Colorado at least, not many forest fires. So
yeah, in Colorado. That's a great... Yeah. California is suffering.
Yeah, they are. Well, speaking of suffering, if you guys remember the books, A Series of Unfortunate Events, a lot of suffering going on in those books, gleeful, joyful suffering, if you will. And our guest this week, today on the show, we have Lemony Snicket, Daniel Handler, that is to say. His new book is Poison for Breakfast. Now, as he himself says, this is a true story based on a note he finds after breakfast that reads... You had poison for breakfast. This kicks off the search for what that poison might have been. And along the way, the reader is treated to the philosophical musings and discourses of the author, including the many ways in which to cook an egg, what simsum is, and all manner of whimsical ideas, all done in the familiar voice of Lemony Snicket that we all have grown to know and love. This is certainly for fans of Lemony Snicket, but also those not familiar with his work will enjoy it. This is a very funny book, a different kind of book, really kind of thing. And it's just full of little insights and ideas and philosophies that you just kind of sit down and ponder on, as I did. Thought-provoking. And speaking of funny and thought-provoking, here is my conversation with the great Lemony Snicket, a.k.a. Daniel Handler.
If you're seeing things running through your head, who can you call?
Ghostbusters!
An invisible man sleeping in your bed. Oh, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
Doing San Francisco?
I am. For example, that would be something not to complain about.
There you go. You got like who do we talk? We talk to Christopher Moore out there in San Francisco. You got like a team? You got any writer friends? You hang out with anybody out there?
Too many, I would say. Oh. Yeah. Andy Greer is a good friend of mine.
Oh. Well, yeah, we talked to
him. We got Adela Waldman. We got Reese Kwan. We got Lucy Corin. We got Maggie Takuda. We got Amy Tan. What I got? We got Matthew Zapruder. We got Ada Limon.
Good God. All right. Too many. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Too many. People need to stop moving to San Francisco. Point taken.
Or if they do get here, they should get like a real job. They shouldn't be in the the narrative fiction or the free verse game.
There you go.
Do something, you know.
Well, I'm in Colorado. People just move here for the free weed. So, you know, that's how it works around here.
Yeah, but there's now that it's kind of legal everywhere, you can't really go off about that.
No.
Then you just have your altitude. That's the only thing you can...
Yeah. We got the huge wave at the beginning, and then all of a sudden, once it started becoming legal everywhere, it's like...
Oh. Yeah, everyone's like, but I'm already stoned. Why would I go to Colorado?
Anyway, thanks so much for joining me. I really...
But of course, it's my delight. Happy to be here. I can't really see anything. I'm trying to judge your background, as we all do.
What do we got? We got a converted 1930s carriage house that I converted into this office for my wife here. So
I got I like the elephant.
You like that elephant?
You have like a salad bowl that's so nice that you put it on its side on a shelf because you don't want to use it. I get that.
Who needs that? I don't got time for salads, for God's sakes.
You got to go right to the main course. You can't, you know, mess around with salads.
That's right. I do. I like your. If we're talking backgrounds, though, I do enjoy your trouble poster with an axe in the stump.
Yeah. It's fun. Yeah. There's some nice stuff. You probably can't really see the rest of it, but I like having trouble over my shoulder when I'm on camera. That seems like a comforting sign to me.
Sure, it does. Or a constant reminder. Now, listen, Daniel. I loved your book. Poison for Breakfast. It was just this philosophical, really engaging tome. This is the book that finally, listen, I've been looking for this for a long time, finally breaks down an easy way to spell arithmetic. Thank you for that. And this is also the book that dares to ask the question, where does a king keep his armies? So what was it that inspired you to write this book?
What was it that inspired me? I think several things at once inspired me, but one was that I found a scrap of paper that said you had poison for breakfast, which is something that I'd written down myself. I didn't recognize it at first, and so it looked like a threatening note. So it kind of went from there. But that was because I was talking to a child of my acquaintance, and I was saying, maybe you should eat this egg that I have prepared for you to eat. And the child said, I don't want to eat that egg. Except he was more forceful. Or she. I shouldn't say out loud that it's my own son because he wouldn't like it. So we're just going to say it's a child that I know.
Okay.
And then I said, you should eat it. It's not poison. And the child said, well, but every moment is closer to my own death. So actually, like, eating this egg will take me closer to my own death. So it is poison. And I was...
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I thought, what a wonderful idea that has been given to me from a young person who has no means to stop me from stealing it and putting it in the book. And so I got busy right away on that.
Yeah. Thank God. That kid henceforth will never be named.
Never.
No.
I try not to look at him. But I mean, I think I was interested in seeing if there was a space in children's literature for the kind of nonfiction book that I like to read. Because nonfiction for children is often either like the story of the civil rights movement or Lizards of North America, which are both those things are super important.
Sure, absolutely.
Obviously, I'm in support of all parts of that. But I like a nonfiction book that is kind of meandering around thinking about things. So so I thought, well, I wonder if that's possible to do. So I decided that it was possible, and I sat in a library and I wrote it. And then here I am.
Speaking to me, it turns out it is possible. And, you know, it is the kind of book where I found myself just kind of reading it and then putting it aside and then just, you know, ruminating on these thoughts you have, because it's kind of the thing that you bring up a lot of questions. You do so in a humorous way, which is, of course, appreciated. One of the things you talk about is this concept of Tim-Tum. Tim-Tum? Am I saying that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not bad for a Gentile. Tim-Tum.
Thank you. Thank you. I try. I've been speaking like a Borat. I'm a high school teacher, so I've got new kids today. So every time I get a group of new kids, I like to talk like this all day long to see, you know, just to kind of mess with them.
And how does that go over, one wonders? Is this a tenured position you have at a school?
No, it's a brand new school. I just started at East High School here in Denver. Nobody knew me, so it's great. So I keep I keep it up all day, and then when they come back, you know, tomorrow, I'll drop my real voice. Just as it's a theater class, so really, you can do whatever the hell you want.
Oh,
you
know, okay. Well, there you go. That seems okay then.
But it seems okay. We'll see.
I don't know. Well, I mean, I'm suspicious of fraudulent accents as an educational tool, and I'm worried for you and your family that you've come to rely on what I'm sure is already a pittance of income
that's
offered to you for teaching, and the fact that you might lose it is kind of more than I can think.
Well, it's one of the few, you know, one of the few accents you can still do and get away with. I found, you know, this kind of phony Latvian kind of Borat Russian accent.
I guess that's true. Yeah. I mean, because it has such a wide array of cultural stereotypes attached to it that you can't quite tell in what way you're being offensive.
Exactly.
You know you're being offensive in some way, exactly. But you're not entirely sure.
No. And then, you know, I can't be called on it. But anyway, getting back to this idea of Tim-Tum, the idea that the world came out of nothing, but this nothingness had to have come from something. Did something make nothing? You know, my head was spinning trying to wrap my brain around this concept.
Basically, in order to think about something, you need to make a space. You need to make an empty space to think about it. And it comes from an old Jewish philosophy about the creation of the world, that before the world was created, you had to make nothing before you made something. But it's often used when you're talking about a ritual or even just a quiet time in your life. And we kind of have this concept outside of the Jewish tradition, right? We say, well, I want to make a space for something, right? Like, I have to think about this. I have to make a space for it. But I think that idea is interesting, that you have to first kind of make some nothing before you can make something. And as a writer, I know that feeling. I have that feeling of like, I need to clear my desk. I need some blank paper. I need some space. I need to make some space. You say that all the time. And that's an interesting idea to me.
When you start out a book, is that, and you talk about just kind of clearing everything out, maybe you go in, like for this book, you came in with the one concept, but do you like to have like a solid idea before you start, or is it that kind of...
No, I like to wander around and I take notes on pieces of paper or index cards, which I then begin to move around on the dining room table, which leads to an interesting philosophical conversation in my household about whether the dining room table is for eating or whether it's for moving around index cards. There's a different, I'm not going to say who has a different, whether it's my wife or someone else. There's just a different conversation going on about that. And then I get the index cards in what I think is a pretty good order. And then I go to a cafe or a library with my trusty legal pad and my Uniball pen, and I begin, and some unsharpened pencils so that I can kind of twirl them like an inept batonist.
A twirler.
Like a twirler. That wasn't a very good assembly, but oh well. And then I start to write things down based on what I already wrote down on the index cards. And then slowly I begin to have a very messy, horrible first draft that fills me with despair. And then I try to pull myself out of that pit of despair through the power of rewriting and one's imagination and, you know, further inspiration, a long walk, reading of more books, watching of a movie, making a gimlet, whatever it is, the thing that might help drag me out of the pit of despair of the terrible first draft. And then there's like a few more drafts, and then maybe it's a book or at least a valiant effort at a book.
Huh. You said in the notes that somebody treated you nastily in the library. Is that true?
Yeah, only one person. I mean, most people were very nice to me in the library. Libraries, by and large, I think are pretty polite spaces.
Do you get recognized a lot when you're out?
Well, in San Francisco here and there, I think, but it's because I've lived here my whole life. So some people recognize me because they know my work, and some people just recognize me because they're like, didn't I used to work at that horrible office? Or like, I think my sister dumped you when you were 19. Isn't that, sure. I think that's who you are. So it's not, yeah, it's not like stardom recognition. It's more like, oh, yeah, that guy. I get a lot of, oh, yeah, that guy.
That guy
comes to the library. He doesn't have a laptop. That guy. You know that guy.
He's no laptop guy. He's legal pad guy. You're legal He's pad legal guy. That's guy, what you yeah. are. Yeah. With your Uniball.
It helps people keep away a little bit. Because I think you look a little spooky when you're writing on a legal pad.
There is something mistrustworthy about somebody writing on a legal pad. I think.
Yeah, like it looks like it might be like a manifesto that you don't want to get near, or
right,
like a long, too desperate love letter. That's often what I think. I think like, it looks like. And another thing, darling, page 51. that doesn't look healthy. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess not. But what did the guy do to you in the library that was so nasty?
Oh, he was leaving the library, and as was I. And there was a gravel path, and he looked a little unsteady. And I said, "Do you need some? Do you need like some help?" And I said, "Like, no, I don't need any help." And then he fell and dragged me with him. And it was like it was one of those things where because it's just a little fall, and because I'm a reasonably young person in reasonable shape,
yeah.
I couldn't admit how much it hurt. I think this is also like maybe your training, sadly, as a man. You know, but I have that feeling
right up,
like, when you're five and you fall, where you want to cry for the rest of the day and you want everyone to take care of you. And instead, not only did I have to get up, but I had to help this man up. You know, and I couldn't say, remember when I asked you if you needed help before and now you lose everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I felt that he was worth mentioning in the notes. I didn't get his name or anything, so it's not, you know, it's not the kind of call out that will get him in trouble. But most everyone else at the library was pretty nice to me at that particular library. I wrote it actually in two libraries, but mostly in this one library on the East Coast of the United States. And then I wrote some of it in the Vancouver Public Library when I was on the set of A Series of Unfortunate Events. I would sometimes have some free days and I would go to the Vancouver Library to work on this book, which was fun.
Nice.
I like going to a library in a town where I don't live. Then you really feel like a mysterious stranger.
You do. And there's just that, you know, I love libraries. I think any reader loves libraries. And there's something about going into a library in a strange town where it feels, it's got that feel to it, you know, and there's something magical and mystical about it. More so than just your local, you know, the branch, and you know the nasty librarians, and you know.
Yeah, and then if you stay at the library you've never been to, and you sit and work, then everyone's like, "What?
This guy? Look at legal pad guy over here. He's coming back again."
Not that long ago, I mean, it was before COVID, but I was traveling in the nation of Denmark, and I went to the library there, and as I entered, this woman spoke to me in Danish, and then she figured out. In the brief conversation that I didn't speak any Danish at all. And then I stayed for hours and I thought they were particularly puzzled. They were like, "He's surrounded by books he can't read. What's wrong with him, man?" he going to teach himself Danish? That's not going to work.
That's funny that you would go to a library in which you don't even speak the language that the books are written in. Most people would just go to a coffee shop to write.
Well, it was, I had work to do, and I was in Copenhagen, Denmark, and I went to this coffee. That was my first thought, was coffee place, because the coffee was also really good.
I bet it is, yeah.
So I went there, but it was a Sunday, and everyone, it was like a family place. Everybody, all the coffee shops were like full of babies and people laughing and things like that. And I thought, I'm going to feel so lonely and sad by myself. Some Danish family is going to adopt me out of pity. And then, I don't know, it turns out because of some obscure Danish law that then I'll have to work for them for 8 years or something because they gave me a croissant. I don't know how it works.
They would have given you, well, they would have probably given you a Danish, not a croissant, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they don't like that joke. They don't like that. Yeah. There's a bunch of, yeah. Like when my wife and I were in Newcastle, England, we kept saying like, oh, is that like close to Newcastle? And then they would say, you know, it's funny you should mention that. There actually is a thriving coal industry in Newcastle. We would say, yeah, that's the, forget it. All we wanted to do was make a super obvious joke at your expense and you won't play along.
It's a simple, a yes and. You're just looking for a little yes and, you know.
Yeah, play along. Yeah, I'm from San Francisco. There's a lot of jokes you can make right away about that. A lot.
Did you, now what sent you to the library in Vancouver? You're working on a TV show.
They were filming the a series of unfortunate events, right. And some days I would have to work there really hard, and on other days I didn't have to be there. And sometimes those days are very boring on a set, sure. If they're building something, and even when they're filming something, you know, sometimes you think when they're going to film something, you think, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to see like a movie star get out of a car and do a big dramatic scene or something, but often. It's like we need a hand on a doorknob over and over and over and over and over again. We're going to adjust the lighting 4 different ways. And then, we're going to get, and it's like watching paint harden. I also felt self-conscious because I knew that people knew who I was on the set and I never wanted to look bored. You know, I couldn't just sit there and say, this is so boring. I had to say like, oh, this is, thank you so much. And we've all worked so hard and now you're working hard and everything's wonderful. And so on doorknob days, I would just go to the library. I would just be missing.
But Neil Patrick Harris in that, I mean, he's phenomenal in that.
Yeah, amazing. He was amazing. He worked so hard. I never saw anyone work so hard. He worked really, really hard. He was tireless. And what hadn't really occurred to me when we cast him was that he was, of course, famous when he was young.
Yeah.
And so he's really, really good with the young actors, not only kind of during the acting part, but kind of looking after them and making sure that they weren't going the disastrous route of most young actors. And instead we're going the calm, sane route of Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah.
When you think about how long he's been famous, it's really kind of a marvel that he has not completely self-destructed, and he hasn't at all. In fact, he's fit as a fiddle. He could like snap me in half if he wanted to. He probably wanted to sometimes.
Maybe he did want to, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But speaking of famous people, you got Patrick Warburton to do the narration for this audiobook. That guy is great. I love that guy.
Yeah, he's a really wonderful man. And he also worked really hard on the television show, of course.
Yeah.
And not only that, but his whole job, he never really got to talk to anybody else. He never got to act with anybody. He was just the narrator. And we would just say, like, oh, we changed half your monologue that you stayed up all night memorizing. And also, like, we forgot to say that you're going to, like, go in this door and a weird thing's going to happen and you're going to ignore it and then you're going to keep walking and we're going to see all this stuff. Like, he had to do all this weird thing. And he would always just say, oh, okay. He would never say, are you kidding? Or who on earth would do such a thing? He would just say, great, sounds good. So, yeah, I got to call him up and say, would you please do the audiobook? And I was really grateful that we were in the middle of a pandemic because even though he's like a glamorous working actor, he had nothing to do because it was a pandemic. So then he agreed to do it. That's my theory anyway. He would say that he loved to do it and he did a marvelous job, and that's true. But in my mind, I think, thank goodness I was able to call you during a global pandemic where no actors can get any work whatsoever.
You didn't want to do it yourself? I know you did the narration on a couple of the...
I did a few of them, but I don't think I'm very good at it, and it's really exhausting. Have you ever done anything like that? I mean, you're on a podcast, but have you ever had to read something out loud entirely?
I mean, as a teacher, sure, but nothing like what I imagine the hours you would have to put in a small enclosed booth to do
it. Yeah, it's not the same as reading to someone, because when you read someone, you can kind of stumble all over the place and it's fine and right. They're there and they know what you're saying. But this, you can't do it at all. And then when they say, oh, you said this word wrong, and then you say, okay, we'll do it again. And then you say the word really weirdly, like correctly, but you've emphasized it in some terrible way. And you do it over and over again. And there's no one, it's always your turn because you're reading the whole thing. It's not like your difficult thing and then someone else's difficult thing. It's only your difficult thing. They're giving you all this sad apple juice to keep your lips from smacking.
Oh, man.
I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough gig. And then I got to host the Audis one year, which is the Audio Book Awards.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I remember that, 5 years previously, if someone had said, oh, you're going to meet all those audiobook people, I would think, oh, whatever. And this time I thought, what a unique and powerful skill you have. I said to them.
And they say, yeah, right, whatever.
Yeah, they were like, we're all dressed up in the Museum of Natural History and we don't really know who you are. Please get out of our way. I think that was the big thing they wanted to say.
That's funny. Now, listen, I got to take you to task for something in your book, Poison for Breakfast, all right?
Okay, ready.
On page 90, so you have a very funny, there you go, all right. Page 90, you enumerate a number of things that you do not like.
It's true.
That you don't like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches? Come on.
No, I like peanut butter. I don't like the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I don't like it.
Have you ever had it on a nice, we get a nice piece of Wonder Bread, gently toasted?
This is what everyone does to me. This is what I do to my friend when she tells me she doesn't like Tom Waits. And then I say, okay, let's just try this Tom Waits record. And she says, like, I don't like Tom Waits. I don't want him. And this is the same. Yeah, people do this to me. Yeah. They're like, oh, peanut butter and jelly, I'll make you one. And I said, but I don't like them.
How about a fluffer nutter? What about that? Are you a fluffer nutter guy?
I don't discuss my personal life on a podcast. So
I apologize. I rescind the question.
I love a peanut butter toast in the morning. I love a peanut butter sandwich in the afternoon, but I don't want any jelly. I don't want any jelly involved in that at all.
No jelly. Okay. Yeah. All right. And no hot chocolate either.
I don't like hot chocolate. I've never liked it. Mm. When I was a kid sometimes, and it would be really cold, and then, you know, somebody would make a bunch of hot chocolate, and so you had to take it. Right? You're like a 9-year-old kid, it's snowing, and someone's made you hot chocolate, and I would think, oh, no.
Yeah, well, and then it would just spill all over your parka, you know, and you get these chocolate stains.
I would spill it passive-aggressively, so I wouldn't have to drink it. Yeah, like, oh, whoa, clumsy me, and they would say, oh, I'll give you some more, and I'd say, no, I don't deserve any more, I'll just spill it.
What kind of books when you were done playing in the snow and spilling hot chocolate over everybody, what kind of books did you enjoy reading?
I liked books in which mysterious and terrible things happened. That was my idea of a good time. Yeah, if it had like a witch in it, I liked that. If it had like, we're all going to summer camp and there's going to be a softball game, I wouldn't like that.
Yeah.
If there was, I live with my mom and dad, but we have to move to a new town, I'm not interested. If it was, I live with my mom and a dad, but there's like an alligator and it's prowling outside the house.
What was a series I was trying to think of the other day? I think it's the I think it was called Twilight, but there was like a Twilight. It was like a series of horror books for young kids.
Are you thinking of Goosebumps?
No. It wasn't Goosebumps either.
Okay.
I used to read them when I was in middle school. I don't know.
Yeah. But I've hung out a little bit with R.L. Stine here and there, who is the Goosebumps author. And I can't believe how many books he's written. And sometimes I'll have a drink with him and then I'll be like, okay, legal pads. And then he'll have the scary idea about the legal pad. He can do anything.
Really?
Anything and make it scary. Yeah.
That's hilarious. Did you?
Yeah, I said like you should get on stage and just ask people. You know, people be like, Q-tips, and then he'll do it immediately. There's nothing he can't make scary.
Ah, that's a gift.
Yeah.
Now you play. You also play the accordion. How did you get started playing the accordion? It's not like an instrument most people naturally pick up.
No, I took piano lessons when I was young, like a gazillion other people.
Yeah.
And then when I got to college, I wanted to be in a band. But it was that moment in American pop music history, like the late 80s, early 90s, where no keyboard instruments were cool. Everything had to be like acoustic and authentic.
Sure.
I'm so glad that era has passed, by
Thank
the way.
God, yes.
Yeah. And so I bought an accordion at the Colombo Brothers Accordion Factory in Marin County, California. And then I joined a band because that was like the only way, if you could do kind of a keyboard thing, that was the only thing that would kind of make you okay. So I like to say, because I wanted to be in a band, that basically I'm the only one who ever took up the accordion in order to meet women. That's how you can kind of track it.
Did it work?
I'm happily married, yeah. And I met her in college. So actually, it did not work. But, although I think if you ask my wife, what is your favorite thing about your husband, she will not say the accordion.
I doubt it. That's probably pretty low on the list.
Yeah. I don't know what she would answer, but it wouldn't be that. I know it wouldn't be that.
Well, you know, we're going to see the Counting Crows. What's that?
Where did you meet your wife?
College. Yeah. In Towson State in a writing class. In fact, the professor was telling the class how many people met in his class and got married. And then we met in his class and later, years later, got married.
Did you invite him?
You know, who's got the time to track that guy down? I don't really. You know.
He's just off blessing other communities.
He's probably full of shit.
Guy I don't know. He just goes from community to community and people meet around him and they marry. That's kind of a beautiful story, actually.
Yeah, if it's true. He's a guy, he's one of those professors who would like to just read from his own works. And so he would just get up.
Yeah. That's why so many people met, is that they said to themselves, well, this is boring. And then they began to flirt.
That's true. That's probably exactly what happened. Yeah, the guy is so boring that people have to turn and meet. Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
I never really thought about it that way. All right, listen, Daniel, quick six. Here we go. Six quick questions to find out a little bit more about you. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
The last show I watched or binged? I would have to say News Radio.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How great is that show? Where'd you find it?
I don't remember. We just looked around and there it was. But it has Patrick Warburton in it, which I'd almost forgotten.
That's right. He came on later.
Not in it for a while, and then he comes, and he's really good. And so that was kind of funny to already have something of a professional relationship with Patrick Warburton and then just be watching TV and be like, oh, yeah, that guy. That's funny.
The great Phil Hartman. Man, he was great on that show.
Everyone's good on that show.
Yeah. Yep.
And what's funny is that now Joe Rogan is famous in an entirely different context.
That's true.
And you want to, I want to go back in time and say, okay, I want to tell you something. In the future, I'm going to be like very famous, but guess why? Yes. And I don't think he would be able to guess, let alone anyone else.
Yeah, it's interesting the paths we take. How about this? What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Fictional world or place?
Yes, sir.
I would like to visit. Okay. I guess like the underworld. Yeah. I would like to visit the underworld. That would be something to see. I wouldn't want to stay there. And I would definitely want it to kind of glamper. I would want to be glamping through the underworld. You know, I would want like a really nice place to stay.
Yeah. No, we'd let you back in. You can go down with your legal pad and your Uniball pens. And
just spend a week there. And they have probably like a really nice hotel just for people who are visiting.
Probably a lovely spa. The sauna, the whole place is just a gorgeous sauna.
Absolutely, beautiful. Yeah, that would be fun. And I assume that also that's fictional.
Yeah, exactly. Well, emphasis on
if it isn't fictional, then I'll have to change my answer, I guess.
I think so. How about this? Give me one of your top five favorite movies.
Oh, gosh. Well, in Poison for Breakfast, I talk about this movie Midnight, which is one of my all-time favorite movies. But being as that is already in the book, I'll have to mention another one. I would have to say The Gang's All Here.
The Gang's That's All Here.
Great. I don't know. Well, you'll watch it tonight and you'll think, oh my goodness, this is so good. And then you'll start binging news radio. Before you know it, you'll be following in my exact footsteps.
Oh, I can't wait. I'll be writing books. Yeah, I'm definitely binging news radio, for God's sakes. Man, that's it. Remember when Phil, the one episode where he was playing the piano and he was in the elevator?
Oh, playing? Hilarious. Yeah.
This is no time for hijinks. What? Yeah. Dave Foley. Yeah, good stuff. How about this? Give me a top five. Oh, this might be a little harder. One of your top five favorite books of all time.
Oh, that is really hard. What can I choose? I'll just choose Beloved by Toni Morrison. That's one of my all-time favorite books.
Good
book. I reread it recently, and I'd already reread it like fairly recent, you know, like I reread it like a year ago, and before that it had been like 2 years, and I said to myself, this is probably too soon to reread it, and it wasn't, and I fell into it.
Wow.
Fascinating, and like a really scary book.
Yeah.
And a really powerful book. I think that that's probably like the greatest American novel there is.
Yeah, you should probably just quit now, really, to be honest with you.
You can't compete with that. If you're Lolita, you can compete with that, and I would say if you're The Long Goodbye, you can compete with that. I would say The Long Secret by Louise Fitzhugh, then you can compete. What else? There's not a lot that can compete with that in terms of an American novel.
All books you shout out in your book. How about this? Give me a go-to karaoke song of yours. Do you have one?
Karaoke song?
Yes.
Yeah, it's changed over the years, of course, as one does.
Sure.
But not lately, because who's been to karaoke lately? But I like the Ghostbusters theme.
Ray Parker Jr.
Ray Parker Jr. But I just sing it, and I don't say the Ghostbusters part at all. It makes me feel powerful, and it usually goes over pretty well with the audience. You know, particularly when you get to what I think of as the climax of the song,
sure. And
you go like, "Bustin' makes me feel good." That's a good people like that.
Who wouldn't? For God's sakes, who wouldn't?
Right.
And finally, Daniel Handler, what book are you currently reading?
What book am I currently reading? I'm reading Barcelona Dreaming.
Ooh.
By Herbert Thompson, which is really great. It's like it's really three novellas, I guess you would say, that all take place in Barcelona, and they overlap in surprising ways. So suddenly you're like, oh, I see where you're going with this.
Oh, I like that.
And I like it also because it's very thoughtful about kind of culture clash that happens in cities. And San Francisco is a city that has a lot of culture clash happening in it, and I like to watch it and like to think about it. And I haven't been to Barcelona, and kind of in my head, I was like, Barcelona's a paradise because everybody always loves it there. But to think about it in terms of its complicated cultural clashes has been interesting.
Very
good. In bookstores now, Barcelona Dreaming by Rupert Thompson.
There we go. I had a girl tell me just today she's from Barcelona. And you know what I like to do? I like to listen to Culture Club while a culture clash is going on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Culture Club always promised more than they delivered. I think if you want to go 80s androgyny, you have to go Eurythmics all the way.
Ah, you go on Eurythmics? All right.
I would go Eurythmics over Culture Club.
All right. Give me Boy George. Well, okay. Let's isolate that.
I think he's available.
Not isolate that. I think he is. All right. Listen.
Like one of your outs, you and your wife have a list of celebrities, and one of yours is Boy George.
That's Boy George. That's right.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to. Yeah, I didn't
like,
mean.
I'll give you a freebie on that one. Yeah. Good luck with you and Boy George.
Well, then I won't ask you who yours is, but, you know.
Grace Jones, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Oh, obviously. Yeah. Yeah, of course. All right, listen, loved your book, Poison for Breakfast. Daniel, loved chatting with you. Thanks so much for hopping on.
Thanks for having me over to Colorado there.
You got it. Take it easy.
Adios.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Inside Flap.
All right, there you go. That was Lemony Snicket, Daniel Handler. Thanks to him for joining us. Check out the book, Poison for Breakfast. All right, let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
Laura, what do you have for us this week?
I have a book called Verity by Colleen Hoover. And I read this on Kindle Unlimited, I believe.
Okay.
So if you're looking for something fast, loose, and a little steamy, This is for you.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Fast, loose, and a little steamy.
A little steamy.
Sounds like one guy's autobiography.
Andrew Down. Mm-hmm.
So a young writer named Lee, whose writing career still hasn't really taken off, she gets an offer. A chance to ghostwrite for a very famous author who recently had a car accident. She gets a job to finish writing a famous and an insanely popular series.
Okay.
So think Twilight famous.
Or how about think the series of unfortunate events?
Yeah, it's a female writer, someone equated to that, with a with like a paranormal kind of twist. It's Stephenie Meyer.
Okay.
It's Twilight. Right. Well, it's Twilight,
why don't you
basically.
Just tell us?
Okay. It seems like it's like it's a Stephenie Meyer
Stephenie
type
Meyer-esque
of writer
writer.
With that type of fame.
Okay.
So if she got in a car accident before she could finish like her third book in the Twilight series, mm-hmm. And her husband had to hire a writer to finish up the series. So this woman takes the deal, pays really well.
Sure,
seems like a great way to catapult yourself after this mm-hmm. into your own. J.D. Barker's done that.
That's right. A lot of people have done
that. A lot of good
James
writers
Patterson.
Have done that. Yeah.
So as part of the deal, is it going to be known that she wrote the book?
Yeah, it'll be known that she assisted in writing.
Okay.
Because this woman's...
That's what you want. You want a little credit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She'll get some credit.
Got a jump start.
So Lee goes out to the family home not knowing what to expect. She's met the husband. He's the guy who hired her. Her agent isn't able to tell her how bad off the writer. No one tells her. Like in the press, it just says she was in a bad car accident. Nobody knows are her feet in splints?
like
we don't know what happened. But she does know that there are extensive notes and outlines to work from. So, okay, I'm going to go do that. So turns out the writer, Verity, her name's Verity. She's comatose. She's being kept alive in the bedroom upstairs. They haven't told anyone. They don't want anyone to know.
No.
Seems like she's possibly brain dead.
Oh.
Lee sets to work in the writer's office downstairs, and she discovers an unfinished, unpublished autobiography that Verity was working on. It's pretty private. She doesn't really want to read it, but it's engrossing. Verity is a really good writer, and it seemingly details her relationship with her husband, who naturally Lee is developing a crush on.
Oh, of course she is.
Her relationship with her young children, and what may have happened in the death of their young daughter a few years ago.
Mm.
So this book will not be for everybody. It's a little bit cuckoo nutbags. Just a little bit.
A wee bit.
A
one
little
to
bit.
Five being
and it,
way, way
like, it took me
bags.
By surprise. Like if you start it, you're like, whoa, I'm going for a ride. Yeah, it's a ride and you have no control over the ride.
Is there such a thing as a little bit cuckoo nutbags?
Yeah.
One to five, where would you put it?
Oh, I don't know. Like a four cuckoo nutbags.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right.
It's just a wild ride.
So like Randy Quaid. So we're at Randy Quaid.
Yeah.
Level.
So this writer, she knows how to entertain her audience. She knows how to thrill.
Mm.
It's got a romance quality to it. I think it might be called like a romantic thriller, technically. And I read this book very, very quickly.
A riller. We call those rillers.
Rillers.
A riller. Mm-hmm. It's a real riller.
Romillers?
Rommeler.
Rommeler.
It's a Rommeler.
That doesn't sound good.
No, it sounds terrible.
No.
Andrew's
frowning.
Have you read the latest Rommeler? Andrew doesn't even know what the hell we're talking about.
No, he doesn't. A romantic thriller.
Okay.
Anyway, it's called Verity by Colleen Hoover, and look for it on Kindle.
All right. It sounds like something you can really just suck right up.
You are, and you might feel like there's some, it's pretty vivid. It's pretty descriptive.
Her last name's Hoover. You didn't, you
oh,
missed.
Oh, I didn't
you
get
went,
that.
Blew right past my joke. Come
this
on.
Like a dad joke there.
Da,
I don't
da,
know.
Da.
Yeah.
Usually Andrew gave
I would not
jokes.
Recommend reading this book, like on an airplane next to strangers or like anyone that you
Why,
might
you
be embarrassed by.
Really?
It's like explicit sex scenes in it.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Just as a heads up.
Andrew just perked up.
Andrew perked up. Yeah. Andrew's awake. Yeah. So
right.
Just like be aware. Like
sure.
Maybe read it while you're on vacation. Don't read it while you're on your way to vacation.
Have you ever had to like maybe, I'm trying to think when we're riding the subway.
I have felt embarrassed.
Have you ever stopped reading a book because you don't want someone to look over?
Probably.
I probably have. Too,
I probably have.
Yeah, and I have as well.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
It is.
Also,
and
what
it's
if
out of
you,
context. It's
also,
out of context.
I know. I will look to see what people read.
Oh, constantly. Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, I can't. I gotta skim through that there.
That's the problem with these Kindles. You can't tell what people are reading.
Yeah. No, but you would be able to see the text of what you're reading,
text,
which is all that really matters at the end
of the
day.
All right, yeah. At the end of the day, it's all about the text. And that is recommended by...
Laura Medicus.
My book this
Dave
week
Medicus.
Is titled One Got Away by S.A. Lelchuk. This is a, you know, I love my private eye books. The private eye in this case is Nikki Griffin, and she is a motorcycle riding, bookstore owning, badass heroine. Now, this book is the second in the Nikki Griffin series, although you do not have had to have read the first one in order to enjoy this one. One Got Away. The case, this is really, the author should have really thought this one out. One got away, but it's the second in the series, you know.
Oh.
I feel like that can be confusing to the... that was like that J.D.
Does
Barker.
Not seem that
Speaking
confusing.
Of J.D. Barker,
yeah.
He had this series, and he got himself confused when I talked to him that one time, because the first book in the series is The Fifth Monkey.
Oh, you know? Yeah. That's a really popular series.
I mean, it's really confusing when you start... But anyway.
And he was James Patterson ghostwriter.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, think about the Star Wars, right? I mean, you know, you got this movie, then they go back, and then they go...
Well, that's true,
I mean,
yeah. That's really
that's true.
That
is confusing.
Episode one is...
I need somebody,
yeah.
I need my seventh grader needs to explain to me...
That's true.
...the order to watch that series.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're right. So then One Got Away is really not that confusing at all.
It doesn't seem that confusing to me.
Why would it be? So in this case...
The Fifth Monkey, though, I agree with you. That seems confusing.
Because then there was like the third to die and the fourth one. I mean...
It had numbers in
the
titles.
The trilogy had numbers, but there were like 3, 4, 5, and it was numbers 1, 2, and 3 of the series.
Whoops.
And he was like, he stopped and he's like, you guys can go back and listen to that J.D. Barker interview. He's a great talker.
He is a good talker.
And he was interesting. But yeah, he kind of laughed about it himself. He's like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have entitled him.
We've learned that's not the author's fault.
And it's not the author's, no, many times. In any case, One Got Away. This is the case of a matriarch of an incredibly wealthy San Francisco family. She has been taken advantage of by a con man who has swindled her out of some money and absconded with it. And it is her son who hires Nikki to track this guy down and get the money back. However, the deeper that Nikki gets involved into the case, the more she finds out that there is more than meets the eye, as there always is, and there always should be, in a great PI book. And this is a fun read. Nikki's she's a real funny character. She's got a lot of charm, a lot of wit. You know, I love the ones, and this is written in the first person. I just love these PI books where the private eye is talking, you know, directly to you. And I just loved her voice. Along the way, she enlists the help of some kind of outcasts, some people on the outskirts, which is always fun. She finds creative ways to escape dangerous situations, of which there are plenty in this book, all while trying to track this con man down. I found the character of Nikki to be a lot of fun. The action scenes, a lot of action in this book. They're very incredibly exciting, and the way that they're written, they're almost like cinematic. You can really picture it. And the actual storyline took some very interesting turns along the way. Check it out. This is One Got Away by S.A. Lelchuk. And Andrew
Dowd.
What do you got this week?
So Dave and Laura, any guess on the genre I picked from this?
Well, yeah,
I do, Dave.
Musical cue to determine. Yes,
Andrew, is it a space opera?
Is it a space opera?
It is not.
Darn it!
Come
on,
no.
Set me up to fail.
No.
Is it a romantic thriller, Andrew?
Oh.
In a way.
Oh.
It is.
See,
but it is. Yeah, boy.
This book is also fast and loose.
Okay.
Oh,
it
okay.
It also has graphic content. In
there
this
you
book.
Go.
Wow.
But. Not in the vein that you would expect.
Oh.
So, the title of this book is Lord Mouse. It is written by Mason Thomas. And there's a two-book series called The Lords of Divinia.
Hmm.
And, you know, so this is the first book. And it is actually, It's a fantasy book, but this is not your typical fantasy book.
Ah, and, so no wizards.
No wizards. There is magic in the book.
Is there an apprentice?
There's no apprentice. Well,
okay. And so, all right. No, this isn't okay. your typical.
Oh, this is different.
And
now.
So
there's always a, is there someone though? Okay, is there somebody?
There we go.
Who has like great power, but is an outcast?
No, well, there's an outcast, but there's not somebody with great power. Mm. And so,
okay,
that's what I liked about this book is
different.
It's, you know, and I almost don't want to call it a fantasy novel because magic plays such a small role in this book. Right, it's like not even a main role,
huh.
Right? It's a challenge to like, you know, figure the magic out, but it is not, it just doesn't play a main role in the book, and that's what I liked about it. So the book is really refreshing. And so the main character, he goes by the name of Mouse.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And so...
Hence Lord. Is he the Lord Mouse?
Well, that remains to be seen.
Okay. Ah.
All right.
And so, you know, no real magic. The main character, Mouse, does not have any magical abilities. He doesn't have any supernatural powers. You know, he's a guy from a decent family. His mother passed away. He was raised by his dad, who is a tanner. Now, Laura, do you know what a tanner is?
Yes, that is someone who makes leather.
That's right.
Correct?
Yep.
Smells horrific, from what I understand.
Right, and if you play the game One Night Werewolf...
That's the only reason perhaps I know that.
The tanner is the guy who wants to kill himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. And so Mouse's dad is...
and I would recommend never playing the game One Night Werewolf, by the
Ultimate
way.
Werewolf. One Night Ultimate.
Is it Ultimate Werewolf? Yeah. Because your kids will want to play it again and again and again.
Now, the thing is...
Such a curmudgeon.
With my kids, I can see like 2 years from now, Dash will be like, hey, Dad... Do you want to play Ultimate Werewolf?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll think back to this.
There you go.
Think back to this.
He's
conversation.
Probably ready for it. Actually, he's about prime age for it.
He
right
is.
Now.
It's prime age.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
he is. He's
we'll
prime age for it.
We'll come back to this.
You might be leaving the house.
You might be leaving with a copy.
Yeah. We'll see. So Mouse is not. He's not your typical. Like I don't even know what to call this a fantasy novel, right? But what else do you call it?
Mm.
And so Mouse is not your typical protagonist. Not only is not like a powerful magician or something like that, he is just a regular person who has risen above his circumstances to try and survive. Now, he has some backstory, he has some history, and what he's trying to do is he basically, you know, lives in the gray area, right? And so he is a diminutive person.
Mouse.
Who's become very powerful.
Wait, you're telling me a guy named Mouse is diminutive?
I know. Yeah. Mm. And so...
Does he have a tail?
Well, this is the tail.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And so... And what a tail it is.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's the end of that.
Yeah. And so... So when he was growing up, an incident happened, and... Because of this incident, basically his dad's life is at risk. And so Mouse has chosen to live to take this path. And he has become basically the person you go to if you want something stolen or you want somebody rescued. I mean, there's no task that he really won't do.
Mm.
And he's very good at his job. And so the, you know, and Mouse as a character is also gay. And I should mention that the author, Mason Thomas, is also openly gay.
Okay.
And there is some graphic content in this book.
I'm understanding what you mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So...
LGBTQ friendly.
Yes.
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 And, you know, and this book makes no apologies. I mean, believe me, it is, you know, it is in your face.
Yeah.
Just don't ask what it.
That's okay.
It is. Okay.
Right. It's probably just as in your face as all the Another heterosexual one. Sex that has been going on in novels.
Yeah. Yeah. So the book opens, and Mouse is in a tavern, and somebody approaches him about a job. And so what I really liked is how the story unfolds. And the person is like, I've got this task, and this is a very wealthy nobleman has been basically apprehended, or he's disappeared. And they suspect what has happened to him, but nobody knows for certain. And so the guy comes in here to hire this guy, and he's like, there's no way this little guy... can do the job. And so in the process of that interview, you learn a lot about Mouse, you learn a lot about his techniques, and I won't give any details away, but just the process in that tavern of this guy interviewing Mouse and how Mouse just turns the tables on the guy. Right? It is hilarious. It is entertaining. But it is also very human, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. a very human story.
Hmm.
And so he does decide...
I have a question. In this world, does Mouse get persecuted for being gay? Does he have to hide it, or is it accepted in this
yeah.
world?
Yeah, and that's a good question. And so in certain circles, right, it's okay, right, okay. to be gay. But you know, being homosexual is... Right, is frowned upon, right? I'd say by most of society.
Okay.
It is frowned upon. And that is a theme
okay.
in the book.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Not just for Mouse, but also for other characters.
Okay.
You know, they've got to keep it on the down low.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he does decide to take on the job. And I won't give away any details, but the job is an impossible job. So getting in is one thing.
Sure.
But getting out is even more difficult.
Mm.
And there are... betrayals in the book,
the mafia,
and
just when I thought I was, you know, up,
and it is not.
They put me back in.
This isn't an epic novel, right? This isn't, you know, mm-hmm. The latest George R.R. Martin.
Oh man, your favorite.
Oh man, year. Your guy.
Oh no,
30-year book in the making. but it is a great tale. It is different.
He
it is refreshing.
Brought, Martin up in a while.
He did it last week.
Did he?
Yes.
I don't remember.
Yeah. You know, you gotta slip that in. Sure. Slip that in there. But it is a great story. It is refreshing. It's different. It's good as well that you have a gay protagonist that is yeah. not like a super magician.
So great. That's yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And the book is Lord Mouse, the first book in the Lord of Divinia, the Lords of Divinia series.
All right, very good. That sounds really good. Andrew,
you know, it's nice to see gay characters
yeah.
In books nowadays.
Yep.
Because I feel like you'd read books before and it would just be all about because they're gay.
Or, yeah, and it would just nowadays, be marketed just that like, way and that's what, but yeah, now it's just...
It's starting, you know, to, right. starting to happen.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get to it. Time for the... Audiobook of the week, and my pick this week is called The Burning Girls by C.J. Tudor, narrated by Gemma Whalen and Richard Armitage.
Oh, that looks really familiar. Is this a hot book?
I don't know.
I feel like it might be.
C.J. Tudor's a popular author, so...
Yeah, I've seen this around. Okay.
Might have seen it around.
Oh, this looks really good, dude.
I tell you what, fans of the BB show The Vicar of Dibley, which Laura and I are fans of, will recognize the setup to this one, in which a woman vicar is transferred to a small town in the countryside of England, surprising everybody when she shows up.
Boy, I love Vicar of Dibley.
And is, in fact, a woman. Yes.
I wouldn't mind rewatching that.
We had to go back and dip back into that. What a great show.
Dawn French. Have you ever seen that show, French. Andrew?
No, I have not. I need to stop shaking my head.
That's true. Oh, yeah, Andrew's over there shaking his head. It's an audio podcast.
The sad thing is I didn't even notice. I just go, huh.
Yeah. but that is about where the similarities end to this book, as the two are completely different in tone. This book is a mystery thriller with even some horror elements.
Horror.
And twists along the way that I just loved. The title of the book, The Burning Girls, refers to a horror that befell this small town. Now, the name of this town is called Chapel Croft. And hundreds of years ago, 8 Protestants, including 2 young girls, were burned at the stake for their religious beliefs, and they actually became martyrs. So the vicar in question is a woman named Jack, and she comes to town with her 15-year-old daughter in tow, along with some questionable decisions that she has made before with her, hence her transfer from the big city of Nottingham. As you can guess, her daughter is none too pleased about this move, especially given the old ramshackle conditions of the chapel and the house that they now have to live in. The town itself is chock full of secrets, strange characters. One of these secrets that Jack finds out when she first gets to town is that the prior vicar took his own life. Ooh. And that's why she's there to replace him.
Ooh.
Adding to the strangeness and mystery are 2 teenage girls that went missing 30 years ago. This is a book that builds in intensity and excitement the further it gets along. And the more that you learn about the town, these burning girls who were martyrs, and its history. This is chilling. This is dark, with a plot that races right up to the ending through the twists and turns. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is The Burning Girls by C.J. Tudor, narrated by Gemma Whalen and Richard Armitage.
On closer inspection, they're not dead flowers. They're tiny twig dolls. "What are those?" Flo asks, peering at them and reaching for her camera. Automatically, I reply, "Burning girls." She crouches down to snap some shots with her Nikon. "There's something of a village tradition," I say. "I read about it online. People make them to commemorate the Sussex martyrs." "The who?" "Villagers who were burnt to death during Queen Mary's purge of the Protestants. Two young girls were killed outside this chapel." She stands, pulling a face. "And people make creepy twig dolls to remember them?" "And on the anniversary of the purge, they burn them." "That is way too Blair Witch." "That's the countryside for you." I give the twig dolls a final, contemptuous glance as I walk past, full of quaint traditions. Flo pulls out her phone and takes a couple more pictures, presumably to share with her friends back in Nottingham. "Look at what the crazy yokels do."
All right, there you go. That is your audiobook of the week. Check it out. Good stuff. You know, I listened to that one while I was sweating an entire Saturday cleaning out the garage. And, you know, the book was so entertaining, I barely even noticed how much work I was doing. We'll see you next week. My name is Dave Medicus.
Adios.
Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Arthur C. Clarke.
Good one.
Uh-huh.
Boston makes me feel good.